Welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in. So today, I have got author Steve McHugh joining me to talk a little bit about some of his older stuff, but also his brand new release, Black Coat, which is his first sci-fi novella that he has released. But Steve, first of all, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm really good, thanks. Yeah, it's been great. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're almost through the week, so it's almost the weekend.
Yes, that's always good.
It is. I mean, Fridays are generally my worst day as far as work goes, but you know, if I can get through like the morning on Friday, I think I can make it to the weekend. We'll see.
Yeah, I think by Friday, if I haven't done the amount of work I wanted to get done during the week, I'm looking at the minutes just kind of tick down very slowly, thinking I should work more. I should work faster. So Friday's sometimes a bit touch and go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what it is. Like, I think it's just because of the anticipation of like not having work for Saturday and Sunday. I mean, depending on like, you know, when you write. I know a lot of authors get a lot of writing done on weekends. But you know, most of the stuff's done during the week. But you know, as far as like 8 to 5, 5 days a week, man, like Saturday morning just sounds so great, especially when it's first thing Monday morning, but definitely when it's Friday.
Yes, I don't write at weekends, or I try not to write at weekends because the kids are home. Mm-hmm. And I figured that I'd like to spend time with them, and it's even with an office that I can lock, it's got some soundproofing in it. I still have 3 children in the house, and it's very difficult to kind of be like, you all need to shut up now, please, because I have to work.
Right, right.
So no more childhood for any of you. Just be shush. So I try not to do that. So I just try to not work at the weekends if I can get away with it.
I hear you. Yeah. See, I've been remote for gosh, over a year and a half now. And, I've got a 1-year-old, so she's here 2 days a week when, like my mother watches her, and then she's at my in-laws 3 days a week. And so like those 2 days, like it's near impossible to get anything done because she's always like beating on the doors of my office. Soundproofing sounds like the way to go, but it's also one of the things you don't want to like shun your kid.
No. Yeah. I, as much as it sometimes does appeal to me to just hide behind the door and just pretend that no one's in here, they will find me eventually.
Yeah.
And then they'll have therapists to talk to when they get older about me. And I don't really think that's a good idea.
I hear you. So I just want to, you know, ask you, like I ask everybody, just tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, did you read a lot growing up? Did you read later on, you know, in your years? Did you start writing early? Did you start writing a little bit later on? And then when did you really start writing seriously?
I've always read. I liked reading. Back when I was, I think I was about 10 or 11, my nan got me a series of classic novels. So there's Sherlock Holmes and Treasure Island, Jungle Book, stuff like that. So I read those. And then I really got into Choose Your Own Adventure books, the Ian Livingstone and Steve Jackson stuff. And then when I was about 13, we had a thing at school, we had an English lesson, and every week you had to write a book that you'd written, read. And my teacher took me to one side and basically said, look, every book you've read is a choose your own adventure book. Could you just pick something that's not? Like, because we're now on like week 20 and this is silly. You need to pick something that's not a choose your own adventure book. He said, go to the library next door and pick just like only 2 or 3 books. So I picked up Terry Pratchett's Men at Arms. Stephen King's It, which should not have been in the school library when I was 13 years old, and a David Gemmell book. And I can't think what the David Gemmell book was, but it was might have been Dark Moons or something like that. And I read them and just devoured them. And then I went to the library with my dad and just got out Dean Koontz, Stephen King, horror, fantasy, sci-fi, thrillers, everything, and just read everything I could. And that kind of started my love of being like, I want to do this. I can do this. I could write. And it turns out that 13-year-old me could not write and was in fact terrible at it. I started being, I'd like to do this, but I didn't really get serious about it until, I was about to become a dad for the first time when I was 25. So 16 years ago, 17 years ago, even. Yeah, now I feel old again. 17 years ago. Yeah, she's just turned 17. So, and I was like I either get this. I either give this a go, or this is going to be one of those, I'm going to be one of those people that always says, one day I'll write a book, and then never does.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined an online writing group, Kelly Armstrong's online writing group, and basically grafted for about five years, and just worked writing little short stories and little things. In they would do this thing every month where everyone had to write a short story, and then everyone would judge everybody else's short story. And one of the best things I ever did to learn my writing was critiquing other people's writing, because I could see errors in theirs that I couldn't see in mine, but mine had the same errors. So I wrote a book that will never be published and no one will ever read because it was rubbish. And it was called For Past Sins, and it was dreadful. And it was a combination of Jim Butcher and Lee Child, Jack Reacher books. And there was no subtlety at all in any part of the book. It was not subtle. It was just a hammer, constant. 150,000 words of perpetual hammer blows.
I mean, it's dreadful. A good title, though. Like, I feel like you could recycle that title.
I might recycle the title, but the actual contents of the book was not so good. And then I wrote Crimes Against Magic. And I, by this point, I was, I think, about 32. A bit younger than that, about 30, actually. And then I went to get an agent, and I got lots of, we like it, but it's very good, but. So I entered it into, it was like an Amazon contest. It was a Penguin Book of the Year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to not be published. So I entered it, and I got into the semifinals. Wow. And I thought, oh, I'll just self-publish it. So I self-published it. A lot of friends of mine were self-publishing it on. And then it did okay. And then I published the second one, and that did okay too. And then a publisher came and said, we want to publish all your work. So that's where I've been for the last 9 years. And then there was the Harlequin books, and the Harlequin Chronicles, sorry, and then Avalon Chronicles and Rebellion Chronicles. That was originally meant to be just one series.
Mm.
And my publisher asked me to kind of break it up into three smaller chunks, which was fine. The Rebellion Chronicles finished. The last book came out at the beginning of the year, which was Horseman's War, which feels a little strange to say that I'm not working on the thing that I've been working on for a quarter of my life.
Right.
But I get to write new stuff like Black Coat and stuff like that. Yeah, no, it's been good. It's been a bit weird. The last year or so since the pandemic happened, really,
mm-hmm.
has been a bit strange. It's been, it's been the end of sort of doing cons and things like that. But it's also been the end of the series that I've been writing and things like that. So there's been a lot of stuff that's all happened in a very short period of time. That's me, basically. I write books and people seem to like them. And so I'm going to just keep doing it because I like doing it and it's fun.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of ends, but like some new beginnings, like, you know, a few here and there. You know, you're able to, you know, not have to just contractually write, but write kind of stuff you've kind of been wanting to. So I know you mentioned off-air, you know, Black Coat was one that like you really wanted to write. And you had the opportunity to do it at that point.
Black Coat, there's a scene in Black Coat which has a fight between a mech and a monster that I've wanted to write for about 15 years and put it into a book. And Black Coat was just the perfect opportunity. And I didn't intend to put it in the book when I started writing it. I started writing it. And then I got to that scene. I was like, I'm going to put a mech in this. Yes, I'm going to put a mech in it. And then I'm going to have a fight with it. And that was just, yeah. I find that my favourite bits that I write are stuff which I just look at and go, that would be cool if I did that. I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm going to see if anyone tells me to remove it. And then when no one tells me to remove it, I'm like, well, that's fine then. They clearly liked it.
There you go. Yeah, you're like, I'm the writer. I came up with it. It should stay in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. That's the same reason why,
to judge what I like?
Exactly. That's basically how I wrote the Nate books for so many years. It was just whatever entertained me. I put in small swearing fox. You like to stab people? Yeah, let's put that in.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I always wonder what that line is between, like, you know, writing what you enjoy and writing what your audience enjoys. You know, did you ever find yourself through the Hellgren Chronicles, since it is a longer series, you know, ever kind of not really pandering to your audience, but like taking some of the critiques maybe of like the first like half of it and going, okay, maybe I'll like take out some of this stuff and do more of this stuff? Or did you like write the entire thing going, this is what I enjoy, I love all of this, I'm just going to keep going with what I like?
There's probably a bit of both. I think Crimes Against Magic is the book that, looking back on it, I would change the most from what I write now.
Mm-hmm.
There are bits in it that I wrote at the time because that was what I thought was popular in that genre. The sex scenes predominantly, of which there are, I think, three. So it's not like there's like a massive amount of sex or anything.
Right.
But I just discovered writing it, and I just don't really enjoy writing them. They're not something
filler.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I just, if I removed it, would it have any apparent impact on the story? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
If I removed an action scene, would that have an impact? Probably a huge one, because you wouldn't understand why this has happened. I got friends of mine who write incredible erotica and stuff, and just amazing stuff. And whenever I read mine, I'm always like, yeah, I don't want to do that again. That's just like, yeah, I don't really care about the sex.
This scene's just weird. Some grunts and some O's, and that's
okay. So, which is why I just don't do it anymore, because I'm just like, yeah, I don't really, it's not my thing, thank you. There was a couple of pieces who were, like Remy, for example, was introduced in Lies Ripped Open. I think it was Lies Ripped Open. And he was only supposed to ever be in that book. And I love writing him so much, and people loved reading him so much, that he ended up being a main character for every book that happened after that one. So, you do have to listen at least something to what the people who are reading your books like. If they say, I really like this is great, then yeah, you know, it doesn't, especially if you enjoy writing that.
Yeah.
Most of the stories are just literally what I find entertaining. Because if I'm entertained, then hopefully other people will be entertained. But at least if they're not, I will be proud of what I've written, because I've at least written something that I feel not proud of, really.
Yeah.
You've got to kind of, I don't want to be rigid and just say, no, I don't care what you like, this is what I'm doing. Because that doesn't usually work.
You don't take like the Martin approach and just like kill off all the people that people actually like.
No. No.
Sucks.
Yeah, no. That feels like the thing is, my point of view is that you can only kind of pull the rug out from under people so many times, and then they'll just stop caring about the rug entirely.
Yeah.
So I killed off a character people really liked in book three. He was only introduced in book three. He dies in book three. And people were very upset about it. But I didn't then go and kill off loads of more characters in book four just because people liked them. And I was like, this will show you.
Yeah.
Because that just
this will set you up.
Yeah. Like, why would you want to go and just anger people who have just paid to read your book? There are major characters who die during the books and stuff, but normally I've known that they were going to die when I introduced them in the first place. I don't normally kill people off just because I want someone to be shocked. I want them to be shocked because they've liked the character that I've written, who I always knew was going to die. I don't want them to be shocked because, oh, now he's dead. That's not how I want to write.
Right. Yeah, I'm always interested that if there's ever, is there a series out there, will there be a series written where like all of like the main characters at the beginning of the story are all dead by the end of it, and then the next one picks up and it's a new set of characters and they all die at the end of it and the new set of, like I'm like you that have to like be... reintroduce main characters in every book.
the publishing marketing people would be absolutely enraged by the idea really of having to redo all of it.
Expensive marketing. Every and... single book.
Yeah, yeah, they hate you forever and ever and ever.
Probably, it'd probably have to be self-published.
Yeah, yeah. It would have to be self-published, yeah. Because marketing will never talk to you again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always look at, you know, series and I go, you know, like, what would happen if, like, this character died? Because they're a main focal point throughout all, you know, the entire trilogy. Like, what if they died, like, 50 pages in? Like, how would you continue the story? Like, who would pick it up? You know, would it be, like, if their son picks up the pieces or something?
Yeah.
You know, because, like, the only thing probably recently that I've seen that has taken out at least, you know, would be, like, Avengers Endgame. You know, it takes out half. Yeah, so like yeah. That's a pretty big one. It's like, okay, how does the other half take out the pieces? But like I want to see like so like 100%. Like what happens if like your mercenary band of five people just all get wiped out and like who's supposed to defeat the evil, you know, by the end of it? So yeah.
Oh.
I'd be interested to read that. It'd probably just be a standalone though. I don't know how they
it would have to be, yeah. I think
how they win people over for books two and three.
Chapter three, everybody's dead. So now we're going to just figure out what we're doing next. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be, it would certainly be a memorable story though.
Mm-hmm.
If you could pull it off.
Yeah.
If you could write it so that people didn't want to murder you after you just massacred the characters that they've grown to love over certain periods of time.
Right.
Then it would be a good story.
Yeah. I know Stephen Arian and the Coward. He started it off with all of like the heroes dead already. And then like it picks up with just like the one that's left over. So it's close, but like, you know, you haven't like invested yourself yet, except for the main character.
His first trilogy, Battle Mage, those three,
Blood Chaos Mage, and
Chaos Mage. They weren't all the same characters in every single book.
Right.
Main characters. They swapped between books, didn't they?
Mm.
And that worked really well. They were very interesting. But he didn't kill off all of the characters every book either.
Yeah.
Some of them kind of come back in different books.
Right.
But no, that worked quite well. But I think, from what I understand, marketing really like it, or publishers really like it, if you've written a series and the main character is the main character the entire way through that series, not swapped around.
Yeah, or you could do what Martin did and keep all the same characters for the first three books and then chop it in half for books four and five and really slow down the pace and really just kind of go,
oh God,
now what?
Yeah.
See, I'm going through that right now. I struggled through A Feast for Crows. I finally finished it. It honestly, up to that point, was the worst book in the series. And now I'm on Dance of Dragons and I'm not struggling as much, but it's still not like – you know, Storm of Swords is like way up here, and the books, you know, four and five are just not up to par.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's also coming from somebody who watched the show before the reading the books, but there could be more action like happening.
Yeah. They're not the quickest paced books in the world.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
The thing was, I think I read the first book and was just absolutely blown away by it because it's brilliant. It's a genuinely brilliant book.
I
had no idea what was going to happen next. And it was great. And book two was really good too. And book three was really good too. And then they just started to get a bit longer and longer and longer. And my interest started to wane more and more and more. Mm-hmm. A little bit like the Wheel of Time books, where I read the first three, I think. I was like, yeah, this is right. And then I read the fourth one, I think it was, and absolutely nothing happened in the entirety of the entire book. And I just went, why have I just read this book?
Yeah. I've heard that happens like for a good chunk too, like between like four and nine. Like it's just like a slog is what I've heard from a lot of people.
There was a lot of, come on, do something, please. And I've read books where not much happens and it's very slow paced, and that can really, really work.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's a book about like magic and it's a war brewing and you've got, you know, chapter upon chapter of, and they sat down and they had a chat.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's do something.
Or introduce like a random character for like a chapter, only to not either talk about him again or to kill him off later. And it's just kind of like, I mean, like, I get it. Like, we want to add some word count maybe, or this person has maybe some kind of connection to somebody else, but like, there's just a lot of like, is this necessary? Yes. Oh, but you know,
it's why I like RJ Barker stuff, because even the slower chapters in his books, stuff happens. Every single chapter, it feels like you're getting a little bit more of a piece of the puzzle of whatever is going on.
Mm-hmm.
The band, The Wild.
Oh yeah, Nicholas Eames.
Nicholas Eames.
Yeah.
From page one to the final page is nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pause for breath. But I defy anyone to read that book and by the end of it not absolutely love every single one of the members of that band. Right. Even though you don't stop for breath the entire way, it just goes. And there's lots of authors, especially now, newer authors anyway, who are coming up, younger authors, Anna mm-hmm. Stevens and all this, and people like that, and Pete McLean, and all these guys who write these incredible kind of fantasy worlds. But you could never accuse them of being like slow and ponderous.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also incredibly character driven.
Right.
And I think that's kind of, you know, the future of fantasy. I think that's what people want. People want these kind of like character-driven, action-packed adventures. Even if horrible things happen to characters you love a lot,
yeah, especially in Anna's case, like, and they're a lot more like tight-packed. They're not just easy. They're not all 800 to 1,000 pages like per book, and you've got to just go, okay, we've got to go for a quest for 250 pages to get to this next place. Like the world building is there and you're able to just hit and hit and hit. And there's always a buildup to something. And like you said, even with like the slower chapters, there's world building or there's explanation of, you know, a history or something there that kind of keeps you rolling, or there's humor, which all those authors that you mentioned always have like a little bit of a dose of humor.
Yes, they do.
In their stuff.
I think that's really important in fantasy and any book really. If I'm reading something and it's, you know, 500 pages long and there's no humor in it at all, that's a really long book. Especially if it's a really dense, serious kind of dark story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, RJ from the Bone Ships is a dark, serious story.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny in parts as well, and you can and Pete McLean's his Peaky Blinder fantasy kind of
War for the Rose Throne, yeah,
it's like super dark but also very funny, and I think the days of, if you write fantasy, it has to be dour and it has to be super serious all the time and stoic are probably gone, which is probably for the best, because I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be like Terry Pratchett funny, but
it'd be nice if it was.
I would be very happy for the next Terry Pratchett to come along and be published and for everyone to fall in love with whoever they are.
Right.
I still have Rising Steam that I haven't read. I can't bring myself to read it. And of all the authors in, I don't know, history who have passed, that's the one that I'm still like, damn it.
Yeah.
I think his stuff meant a lot to me and still means a lot to me now. I still read Hulkfather every Christmas because it's just the most heartwarming, beautiful Christmas story about death. And trying to be Santa, basically, and it's brilliant. I think there's not many authors who are as clever as Terry is, of course, is whatever way you want to put it.
Yeah, yeah. Now I would say the most clever author that I think I've come across in the last, you know, half a decade or so, probably Josiah Bancroft. I don't know if you've read his Books of Babel series. It's so clever and every sentence is meticulously written. I can't imagine how quickly he writes these books, because it's not just simple prose. None of it.
No.
And then he just has all this hilarious stuff just packed into it.
It feels like everything that he writes has a purpose, which is why normally I'll read a book and I'm like, oh, that's great, that's great. But with his, I'm kind of like, wait a minute, did he mean that word because that's just a word he's used? Or has he meant that word because this has happened a couple of hundred pages ago?
Right.
And it's alluding to something. And yeah, very few books these days make my head go, wait a minute, I need to make notes.
Yeah.
I need to keep notes. I need to figure out what is going on. Brilliant books. Absolutely.
Yeah,
third one.
Okay. Yeah, I reached out to him. I went back through the first three, and I reached out to him, and I was like, why did you do this specific thing? And he wasn't an immediate answer. And so I kept listening, and I messaged him back, and I go, never mind, you just answered it 5 pages later. Because I just noticed something that was kind of a repetition thing, and I was like, there has to be a reason. There's no way it got through editors. Josiah meant to do this, and he probably had to tell his editors meant to do it, and then it gets answered, and I was like, oh, I'm just dumb and impatient.
Yeah, he's a very talented author. Well, I remember when the first book came out, and a lot of other authors were singing his praise,
mm-hmm.
and that's usually a good sign of from a traditionally published writer. That's usually a pretty good indication of how good an epic fantasy book is going to be.
Absolutely.
When a lot of other big name fantasy authors say, yeah, this is real good, and especially when I know some of those fantasy authors, and I know that they haven't just added their name to it, they actually think it's really good. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
When you're talking to a friend of yours outside of this, and he's like, you need to read this book, it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah, that's what makes the difference.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of tricks of the trade as far as blurbs go. I've been told if it reads like this, I really liked it. But if it reads like this, I kind of liked it. So it's like you got to read between the lines.
there's some. I've been asked to blurb a few books, and sometimes I've had to say, I'm sorry, but I don't have time. But I've never blurbed a book I didn't like, ever. I've read some books I didn't like, and then had to be like, it was all right. You don't really put that on the front page, do you? It was all right.
Just put it on the front page. Shrugs. Steve McHugh.
Yeah. It was all right. Good job. Well done. Go write another one.
Try harder next time.
Yeah. But some, I always, if I really like it, then yeah, I will happily sing its praises to anyone who will listen. And the last few years, there's been an absolute wealth of incredible fantasy writers.
Oh, yeah.
The last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible fantasy after incredible fantasy. You know, the Broken Earth series and all those kind of stuff. And it's just been amazing. And I don't write epic fantasy. I like to write epic fantasy. And one day, I will hopefully write epic fantasy. I have an idea. I have many ideas, more ideas than possibly write. But seeing some of these people, you know, like Broken Earth, like RJ and all this kind of stuff, and just think, I really have to up my game. You have to be at the very, very pinnacle of your game.
Right.
In fantasy at the moment, because it's just, there's so much talent there.
Yeah, it always baffles me when you see those people that go like, I've read everything. It's like, have you really? Have you read everything?
No.
It was like, have you been around the past 5 years? Because there's a lot out there. I'm looking at the bookshelf now, and I haven't read half of what's on the bookshelf. So.
No, there's every month I go onto Amazon when they have their first day of the month Kindle sales, and I pick out all of the fantasy and science fiction and horror books that are new on there, and like thrillers and anything else I want. And I bought for like 99p each, and I'll be like, there's like 10 books, that's fine. And then a month later, I'll have read one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Why are we like this, Steve? Why?
I see it and I think, I've heard good things about that. I'll buy it. And then I meet the author. And he's like, there's someone else, have you read the book? And you're like, no. I own it.
Or you pretend that you have. I'm like, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Which doesn't really work when someone says, what's your favorite bit? And you're like, oh, I don't know, man. Page 67. Damn, that was good.
You like try to like remember the synopsis and be like the part about when the guy goes into the bar, it's just wonderful. Yeah. Oh, so
just,
great.
Just read the cover before.
Please stop asking the questions. Before you
yeah. No, I lied. I didn't read anything. I just I looked at the cover and thought it was pretty.
Yeah.
Well done.
Spent $20 on this book just because I wanted the cover on my shelf. And
Yeah.
You're welcome for the purchase. I mean, it should make you happier. Now, I will say, you mentioned wanting to write an epic fantasy. I'm pretty sure Jonathan Mayberry's coming out with his first epic fantasy book next year. You know, he writes a lot of horror, and he's been writing for years. So there's always time. You got plenty of time.
There is. There's always time. And especially in kind of how publishing works these days, there's always self-publishing, which is, you know, how I did Black Coat and how I've done the novellas in the past. And it's a perfectly legitimate way of publishing. You know, when I first self-published 12 years ago, it was just the peak of sort of the self-publishing glut that happened at the time in the early 2010s. And then it kind of petered a bit. But there was still very much a stigma of if you're self-published, it means you haven't edited the book. And it means that you couldn't get published traditionally, which is nonsense. Yeah. And but I think these days self-publishing is much better regarded. I think that's because there's so many really good self-published authors who chose to self-publish,
right,
and not because they had no choice.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, just as good of editors. You've got amazing cover artists and illustrators.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost impossible sometimes to like pick a traditional over, like if you were to look at two side by side, look at a traditional and look at an indie, there are a lot of times where you kind of look at it and go, you know, this indie book looks amazing. I think I'm going to go with this one. A lot of times it's just as good, if not better. I mean, take Dragon Mage, for example. I don't know if you've read ML Spencer's Dragon Mage. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's got a gorgeous cover, and it's like one of my top reads this year. And there's a lot of you know, top indie authors out there that are just pushing books out. And you know, a lot of people are going like, oh, you know, well, I follow this traditionally published author. You know, they may have a book a year. Sometimes the book gets pushed out another year because of the publisher, or, you know, issues like we're having now with like paper shortages and stuff. Whereas like, you know, self-published, they can be like, I'll put out a book every 6 months and you'll at least be able to get a Kindle copy, until these shortages are sorted out. And generally they're a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's, you know, people like Rob Haynes with the Never Die and there's so many good, books that probably would never get self-published traditionally because they don't fit into whatever category you would want
a
publisher to fit you.
Right.
But with self-publishing, they don't really have that problem. You know, there's a lot of, I could be here all day just naming names, but there's a lot of really...
I mean, look at like Lit RPG. Like, I don't know a publisher that's like, bring it on, like it's all self-pub or like small indie press stuff, but like they're selling like hotcakes because you're getting all these gamers now that are reading or listening to Lit RPG books because they're like, I'm listening to stuff that I enjoy doing on a daily basis, it's stuff that, like, you know, we grew up doing in these, you know, past couple of generations, just playing video games. So Yeah, I want to read. I want to listen to a story about a player leveling up and getting new equipment and all kinds of stuff. It's real neat.
There's a level of creativity in the self-publishing kind of sphere that I think is really, really high. And I think if people aren't reading self-published work, then they should really give it a shot, because there's some very, very good stuff. And yeah, there's just, you know, there's some really, really good authors who do very well for themselves as well.
Yeah,
you know, like Michael Fletcher and co. And they've done some they just do brilliant stuff. And they're talented bastards. And they are just great. There's just a lot of really good stuff. And then G.R. Matthews, he's now gone on to do a traditional published fantasy book. Which was absolutely incredible, but his self-published stuff, especially the Chinese inspired kung fu film kind of books, were great. And no, yeah, there's a lot of really, really good self-published authors out there. And yeah, I think that's always going to get. I think it's going to get the line's going to blur over time, especially with more doing both.
And I feel like it's starting to really plateau. I mean, I know Zach Argyle did a post for us right after the end of Spitbo 6 about like that line just like not even, it's just even now between traditional and self or indie pub. It's because like the quality's there. I think it's just if people can get over that stigma hump of say a decade ago when anybody could do it and everybody was doing it and just pushing out whatever, you know, a lot of authors nowadays have really taken all that stuff in consideration going, well, if I'm going to publish this book, I'm going to hire a good editor. I'm going to have a good cover and my books. I'm going to have beta readers. It's going to have to go through all these different motions to make sure that my final product is going to get purchased and enjoyed. I mean, you're still not going to please everybody, but not every traditional public, you know, book pleases everybody. So
there's always going to be those people, especially with self-publishing, who say it's not edited properly. It couldn't get published properly normally. And it's usually nonsense. A lot of, you know, there's really two types of self-published people. There's people who take it seriously, and there's people who think it's a quick way of making money. And it's not. Anyone who thinks that being an author is a quick way of making money probably needs to go and do something else, because they ain't making lots of money being an author.
Right.
Most authors I know still have their own full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, self-publishing has come a long way in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as people hate on Amazon for a host of perfectly valid reasons, they're allowance of self-published authors onto Amazon has absolutely revolutionized how people write and how people get their books to other people, and that's been impressive to see. And you know, there will continue to be people who are self-published and then traditionally published, like I was, and like, you know, Jeff was, and a whole bunch of other people. And that's cool as well. And people who do both, and like me, that's cool too. Do whatever you need to do.
I think it's a great idea because, you know, kind of back to our point at the beginning is that, you know, it gives you the ability to, you know, maybe publish something that you couldn't get a contract for, like in the past. Yeah. Like you've had a book that's just been kind of sitting in the wings. You're like, you know what? I'm just going to self-publish it. I've got an audience. People like my stuff. So let's try this one. And
yeah.
What harm is it to me?
Yeah, that's exactly why I ended up publishing Black Coat. Publishers really like it when if you've had success, that you stay in whatever lane you've had success in to continue that success. And when you wish to switch lanes to try something else, they tend to get really angsty.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to write science fiction books. I like sci-fi. I've always liked sci-fi. And you know, I grew up reading Dune and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is like Dune, because it's not, But
this is Dune-esque.
Yeah. Prepare for disappointment. Anybody picking it up thinking that this is what it is. So I like kind of I like crime noir stuff as well. So I just kind of mashed the two and wrote a crime noir sci-fi book. But I don't think that would have been allowed to happen in a traditional published sense from me as an author known for urban fantasy.
Right.
In the same way as if I wanted to write a Western, I think they probably would have said, excuse me, what do you want to do? That's not really what we do here. Thank you very much.
Could you not do that?
Yeah.
Let's just keep this urban fantasy train rolling.
Yeah. That's kind of what
I wish. I wish bands would take that into consideration. Like I mean, I know it's been happening for years, but like when I was growing up, you know, you'd always that first album come out, and you're like, gosh, this is so amazing, and then they decide to go like in a different direction for the next album, and you're like, man, why did I waste my money on this? This doesn't sound anything like they're supposed to sound. I was doing kind of the same thing.
The thing I like about certain bands is they get to a certain point in their career, a bit like Foo Fighters did with this year with their disco album.
Mm-hmm.
A certain point of the year of their career where they can go, now we can just do it one.
Doesn't matter.
Do whatever we feel like. And that's fine, but don't try that one album two.
Yeah.
Album two doesn't need to be, we're so big we can do what we want. No. That's like album eight.
Yeah, we're going on world tour, so it's time to change.
Yeah.
We're not playing the same songs next year.
We had number one hit. We can do whatever we want now. No one's going to stop us.
Oh, no. Yeah, it baffles me sometimes. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the same thing with your traditional self. It's just like, you know, your publishers are going to want, you know, if you're going to sign in, you know, a second contract, or if you're even going to sign your first one, say you just got standalones, we're like, kind of stay in the same lane, but like,
yeah,
you know, you can experiment a little bit here and there, but like, don't completely change genres on us, because we're not going to fulfill this contract.
That's why for the first six books of the Harlequin Chronicles, I had loads of flashbacks to previous times in history. So I got to write historical fantasy and like cowboys and books set in Nazi Berlin and all this kind of stuff in history. And then I still got to do all the urban fantasy kind of magic-y monsters and stuff. And that was great. But then the plot became so overwhelmed that if I'd started adding chapters about historical stuff as well, I would have books thrown at me, because it would have been absolutely enormous.
Yeah.
And it just would have been convoluted and a massive mess. So I couldn't keep it forever. But for those first like six books, yeah, I got to do all the historical stuff. So I got to do like the Crusades and all sorts of other cool bits. And which is why when I do the novellas for the Harlequin stuff now, a lot of them are historical, because I can. No one can tell me I can't.
Right. That's
great.
I'm going to stand on this soapbox and I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah. If you're not going to buy it, that's fine. I'd like you to buy it, but
yeah,
I'm still going to write it, because I get to self-publish it.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So speaking of self-publishing, let's talk about Black Coat. So brand new release, your first sci-fi novella, first sci-fi, I guess,
anything,
publication. So tell us, what is Black Coat about?
Black Coat is about a black coat. Black coats are the cops of this particular world. They are elite cops. This world is sort of a dystopia. It's not quite Mega City One, but it's not far off from becoming very similar kind of thing. Everyone kind of works all underground, and because it's freezing cold so often. And Celine is a black coat, and she is betrayed by her friends and allies, or people she thought were friends and allies. And she does not appreciate that, and decides to kill everybody who ever involved themselves in her betrayal and the murder of her partner, her police black coat partner. And basically, it's Celine's mission of, right, you've it's basically there's a scene in an old X-Men comic where Wolverine is fighting I can't remember what they're called now. Anyway, he's pushed down this into the sewer And he comes up and he says, "You've had your turn, now it's my turn." And then he proceeds to just kill everybody on the way back up to fight. That's this, but in science fiction form. They've tried to kill her, they failed miserably, now she's going to murder them all. Yes, she's a very tough lady, and is not someone that you should want to cross. And it was a lot of fun to write. I got to write a mech fight, I got to write monsters and science fiction-y stuff and dystopia stuff, and it was a lot of fun.
I say, sounds like, you know, very, very John Wickish. You know, you kill my dog, and John I'm just Wick, gonna freaking kill and murder everyone.
Yeah, it's very science fiction noir John Wick. She is very much a force of nature. She didn't used to be. She wasn't always a black coat. She used to do other stuff, and as they go through the book and the bad guys discover she used to do other stuff, they regret their life choices very, very quickly. It's just, I kind of wanted to write a short, it's 120 pages or whatever, so it's not that short, but something that's just from beginning to end, really, like, just no breath, no pause, just absolutely hell for leather. And that's hard to do in a 450 page novel.
Yeah.
It's much easier to do in a 125 page novella.
Right.
That was why I wrote Black Coat. And people are asking for a sequel now. So now I have to write Black Coat 2. Whatever that's going to be called.
Black Coat 2. The coat that's black.
Yes. Yes. Dark gray coat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The
I've got a spectrum of colors to go through. I could just pick a coat color. It's
red
fine.
Coat,
I'm all right.
Blue coat.
Yep. Yep.
You should totally do that. Just introduce like a whole nother like level or order to like
a rainbow coat. Of coats.
Do it.
With Celine murdering people.
Yeah. And in every different color. Okay, just so would you say that's, I guess, you're going to be your next project to work on, or are you working on some other stuff now?
I'm working on quite a few things. Black Coat, the second novella or novel or whatever it ends up being, probably won't get started until next year now. I'm working on an urban fantasy book at the moment, set in London, which is more sort of Lovecraftian horror theme than just straight out action magic-y stuff. There's quite a lot of action in it still, but it's not the Helicon Chronicles is very I kind of put it as the Helicon Chronicles is sort of my Avengers, the Helicon and those three series, they're the sort of Avengers, they're the end game and that whole thing. And I wrote another book called The Last Raven, which is with my agent, which is more like my Daredevil. Like it's kind of a street crime kind of thing. And the one I'm currently writing is more Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Kind of like a weird, twisty thing. So anyone not into comics will have no idea of anything I've just said, so that's fine.
More surprises for them when they get to it.
Yeah, yeah. It will be a nice shock when you read it and you don't know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I'm working on that, and I'm going to write the second Last Raven book, which I don't have a title for yet. It's just called The Second Last Raven Book. And
really catchy title.
I know. They're set in New York. And they're a bit more horror. Hot action horror sort of thing, more than just urban fantasy. My agent asked me about Last Raven today, and I basically said that the first Last Raven book is what happens when you write 13 books in a series, and then you take all the knowledge and you go, I could write a number one first book, and it would be better than the first book of that series I've just finished, because I now know all the mistakes I made writing that book not to make them for this book. So that's kind of where that is.
There you go.
That's the weird thing about writing a series is that you get better as you go, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So when you look back at the old stuff, you're like, oh, man, I wrote that. Oh, I'd change that, and I'd change that, and I'd change that. So, yeah, and then I've got a whole science fiction series thing I'd like to write, and an epic fantasy series I'd like to write. And yeah, I've got lots of stuff. I get more ideas than I could probably ever possibly write. Hopefully a lot of them will.
Feels like you just need, you know, more yous. You know, you need, yeah, like that would be two, really three of you.
Yeah. I would very much appreciate more me's to come and just write stuff. Right. That would be great.
Yeah. We'll come up with that technology at some point, right? Like, yeah, just like, yeah, I would love to have more me's so I could spend more time reading, but it just doesn't.
Nothing could nothing will ever go wrong with cloning yourself. We've been shown this repeatedly. Yeah. Nothing ever happens back.
It's always perfect. Yourself. 24/7. Yeah.
Every single time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. last question I got for you. Anything you've read recently that you'd recommend?
Anything I've read recently that I recommend? I am currently reading, actually, R.J. Dark's book, the name of which I've forgotten. So I'm going to actually just check whilst I'm on the computer right next to me so that I can say what it's flipping well called, because it's a numbers game.
Okay,
it's a thriller. It's a thriller more than fantasy or anything. But I also read the first Murderbot book, which was excellent. I really, really enjoyed that. And I've been catching up on my Usagi Jimbo.
Okay.
Comic books, because I love Usagi Jimbo, and I kind of stopped reading it for a while for one reason or another, and so I've been catching up with that. Oh, also, because loads of people keep telling me to read it, I'm finally starting the Venom comic series.
Ah,
the King in Black, I think it's called, or something like that. The big overarching special that people keep saying, oh, you should read this, it's great. And I haven't done, so I'm starting it. Yeah, I used to read a lot of comics as a kid, and I don't read so much comics anymore.
I gotcha.
But anyone who reads my work, there's a dozen references to various comic books that I will have read throughout my life. Yeah, weird how you get older and you think, oh, I should have more time to do stuff. And you don't. It's the opposite of that.
Literally the exact opposite, especially when a kid is involved. It's
yes.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Why is life like this?
Yeah, there's always like 30 things that need to be done when you think, I can take some time. I'm fine.
This house isn't gonna clean itself. The grass is not gonna cut itself. Yeah. I have to go get groceries.
just have a self-cleaning house. That would be nice.
I wish I could just could download a book into my mind and it just be there, and I just have all knowledge of it. Like, I read that.
That would
great.
Be good. One day, I used to like was it in the X-Men film? I don't know if it was the film or the comic books, where Charles Xavier said that he read the minds of writers to read their books before they were published, so that he would know what he didn't have to buy the book. He just knew what it was. And I always thought that was A, really invasive and quite unpleasant, but B, actually kind of cool, because it would mean that I wouldn't have to just have a massive to be read pile.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'd like to know what this book is. I'm just going to download it into my head.
And that's the bad thing about it is, and I feel so bad, but I don't feel so bad about doing this convention every year, because like, I know I'm just adding to people's woes, but like in a good way. Like, you're never going to not have a pile of books that you need to read. So like, might as well add more to it, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You're never going to finish every book, so you might as well just keep adding more books to it.
Exactly. And then just like eventually, maybe, probably not going to get to one of those.
No, probably not. No. But you might as well, you know, you're in for a penny, in for a pound at this point, aren't you, really? Yeah. Might as well keep adding.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you can get some signed books, like might as well spend the extra money to still not read the books.
Yeah. Why not get signed books and just not read those? but they look pretty on the shelf.
That's what I do. So, I just buy signed books and put them up. And I've been asked, like, so you're going to get like a book that you just read? And I go, no, that's not, that doesn't have, I'll just get an audio book if it's available.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a few books from friends of mine who are, they're signed from friends of mine and they're up and I'm like, cracking. Now I have to read them all.
Yep.
Now I've read most of them, thankfully. Because I think that if it's a mate of yours and they sign your book for you, you are probably should read the book.
Probably. Yeah.
Because at some point,
I'm really guilty of not doing
when
this.
You have a conversation with them and it's going to come up and you're going to go, no, should I have done? Was I supposed to read that book? So yes, I,
That's the hard part about being a blogger too. And knowing a lot of authors that like you get messages go, so did you enjoy it? And I go, I haven't gotten to it. David, you've had that book for a year. I know. do you realize how many books I get? Like, it's not possible. Like I would love to say yes to everybody. And I,
yes,
fortunately kind of do sometimes.
Yeah. I will make sure that if I know an author, and I read their book and I didn't like it, then I will just never talk to them about it. That's how I go now.
You just cut off communication.
I just don't talk to them ever about writing at any point.
Like, or just change the subject. Yeah, so did you read the latest, whatever?
You spoke to my twin. I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. And the problem goes away all by itself.
Absolutely. Oh my god.
Anyone watching this, don't do that. No, please don't like message me on Twitter telling me I'm a terrible person.
Please don't DM me and ask, yeah, is that why you don't talk to me anymore?
Yeah. I don't need anybody messaging me saying, did you really do that? Did you just tell me that you haven't read my book and you hated it? No, I haven't.
No, I'm
thoughtful for thankful that most of my author friends are actually very, very talented. Very thankful in the fact that they are very talented, so I get to read awesome books.
Yeah.
But then occasionally I finish a book and I just think, you bastard. How are you this good? How is that possible?
Gotta step up my game.
Yeah, when I've read a friend's book and just kind of gone, no, I don't know how he's done this, but this is witchcraft. I met this person, he can't string a sentence together. I don't know how he's managed to write this book.
That's what it is. You got to be really awkward in social situations and you can really, yeah, really write.
Yeah, apparently that's the secret.
Yeah. Well, Steve, man, I appreciate you you taking the time to come chat with me. It's been great. And looking forward to having you back at TBRCon for a second D&D session, yes, and joining in on a panel this year.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be awesome. So yeah, everybody that's watching TBRCon 22 starting on January 23rd through the 29th, and come see Steve there amongst his 100 plus friends. So and Steve, congrats again on the release of Black Coat, and best of luck with all the stuff you've got going right now.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Talk to you soon.